calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Bush is doing his press conference at the moment, telling us how the Democrats are voting to help the terrorists and the Republicans are voting to
keep you safe by taking away your civil rights.
Yeah, it's a fine thing, isn't it? Welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. Ben Shapiro is with us with FamilySecurityMatters.com. Family Security Matters. How would you describe your website, Ben? I don't want to characterize it on your behalf.
I think that the website describes itself as a site devoted to, you know, matters regarding security for American families, ranging from, you know, domestic issues as far as crime to foreign policy issues. I think obviously lately it's become much more foreign policy centered based on the war on terror and the North Korean situation.
Yeah, and you're suggesting here in this news release that you sent out to talk show hosts all around the country, liberals have gleefully noted the one sentence insinuating that the current war in Iraq has increased Islamic extremism, that from the National Intelligence Estimate. You say an estimate on terror. It's actually called the National Intelligence Estimate. And you say what they're sweeping, they being the liberals, under the rug, argues FSM contributing editor Ben Shapiro, that's you, is that the NIE report confirms that Iraq is the most important place for the American military to be right now. Why?
Well, I think that the sentence that got all the play from the NIE was the sentence that said that the Iraq conflict has become the cause celebre for jihadists, breeding a deep resentment of U.S. involvement in the Muslim world, et cetera, et cetera. The next sentence is actually more important, I think. It reads, should jihadists leaving Iraq perceive themselves and be perceived to have failed, we judge fewer fighters will be inspired to carry on the fight. You know, whether or not you agreed with going into Iraq, and certainly there are many reasons, you know, on both ways, for going in and against going in. The bottom line at this point is that that's where the battle's being carried out. And if the United States were to pull out now, or if the United States were to concede, you know, territory or ground, or, you know, any sort of cause that the Iraqi extremists would you know, like, then terrorists will be encouraged to strike American targets, as they have in the past. I mean, every time the United States pulls out of an area or makes concessions or does nothing in response to a terrorist attack, the risk of terrorism increases. I mean, you've seen that with Israel as well.
I don't recall seeing that with Vietnam.
No, that's because Vietnam was to a certain extent. I mean, Vietnam, with regard to Robert McNamara's escalation strategy, it was specifically designed to slowly increase the number of troop levels rather than, you know, go in with overwhelming.
No, my point is, when we pulled out of Vietnam,
Vietnam and kill, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. So, I mean,
well, there was a civil war going on. I mean, you know, that we had, to a large extent, created and exacerbated. North and South Vietnam were partitioned before we got into this whole thing.
Well, I mean, it was partitioned, but the problem was that that partition was coming down, which is the reason that we got involved in Vietnam in the first place. I mean, it wasn't an attempt to invade North Vietnam. It was an attempt to defend South Vietnam.
Which I guess brings us back to the question, you know, why should we be involved in these things at all? But I'm, you know, frankly, I'm really concerned that you're out there suggesting that liberals are gleefully noting that Iraq, the current war in Iraq, has increased Islamic extremism. What's gleeful about that? I mean, it's a tragedy.
I think that, you know, I'm glad to hear liberals saying that, but I think that there are a lot of places, you know, let's say, you know, Arianna Huffington's website, which tends to be a more extreme website, I think. There are a lot of liberals who are quite happy to see a study confirming what they've been arguing, simply because they feel that it's better that studies should confirm what they've been saying than that we should actually be successful in Iraq. I mean,
but the fact
no
of the matter
at
is,
this point,
we,
that liberals have put themselves
the
in
fact
a
of the matter,
to benefit
but,
politically from you know, from bad things happening in Iraq.
But Ben, you know, before we invaded Iraq, there were many of us who were out there in the streets and in print saying, if you invade Iraq, you're going to end up with a guerrilla war. When you invade a country, they don't like it. People tend not to like that. I mean, if Mexico and Canada invaded the United States, I suspect, Ben, you and I would be arm and arm out there with guns trying to fight them off.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, certainly I made a similar point, you know, before the war, but I think that when you invade a country, they don't like it. I mean, you sort of have to define who they are. I mean, when you talk
the
about
the vast majority of the attacks,
Iraqi people as a whole, or are you talking about the Iraqi people who are under the thumb of Saddam Hussein, or are you talking about the terrorists who are now attacking us there?
Well, it's not the terrorists who are attacking us there. The vast majority of attacks that we're coming under are from Iraqis themselves, who view themselves as freedom fighters, who have nothing to do with al-Qaeda or jihad. In fact, most of them are Sunnis, and al-Qaeda is, or most of them are Shiites, and al-Qaeda is Sunni. Certainly
well, I mean,
a war
that
between those two
that
groups. But, I mean, you're mischaracterizing the reality of the situation. And we were saying from the get-go, this is what's going to happen. And right-wingers like you were out going, oh, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be a cakewalk. We're going to have, you know, they're going to throw flowers at us. We'll be welcomed as liberators. And now we are the problem. We have become the problem. I think the CIA saying this.
Like me, I think that, first of all, if you're going to say right-wingers like me and implicate me in that, then you should probably actually read my old columns in which I said that we would be able to topple Saddam Hussein extremely quickly, but it would take years to rebuild the place, and there would be severe guerrilla warfare. So, you know, I agreed with you when it comes to that point. But at the same time, I think that when you mischaracterize this as saying that this is simply a number of Iraqis who have no terrorist connections whatsoever fighting against, you know, quote-unquote American occupation, of Iraq.
I'm quoting the CIA.
First of all, the idea that the Sunni Shiite divide precludes Shiites from being involved with terrorist activity is just belied by the fact. I mean, Iran has fomented terrorist activity. Iran is a Shiite country. Terrorist organizations...
Where is willy-nilly redefining terrorists?
They work together all the time. They trained together in Lebanon in the 1980s. They trained together in Syria.
Ben, do you think by filibustering me you're going to win an argument or something?
No, I mean, if you want to say something, go right ahead. I mean, you've been talking over me as well, so.
Yeah, that's conversation, I guess. People interrupt each other. But the point is that if let's just see if we can find some small measure of agreement here. If the majority, first of all, I'm assuming that you believe the Central Intelligence Agency when they suggest that the vast majority of the attacks against U.S. troops are coming from Iraqis who don't want us in Iraq, and that at least 60% and some measures, the Pew poll, for example, 80% of Iraqis feel that attacks on Americans are justified because we're an occupying force. Are we in agreement on that?
Sure.
Okay, these are like the facts on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that from their point of view, the vast majority of the Iraqis who are attacking us are not terrorists. They are freedom fighters in their minds.
Okay.
You with me on that?
I know Osama bin Laden's own mind. He's a freedom fighter and not a terrorist.
I'm not talking about Osama bin Laden. I'm talking about the guy who 4 years ago was a car mechanic and today is building IEDs.
Right,
and he would much rather be a car mechanic.
I understand that, but their self-identification I'm not sure is important to the point.
So if that's the case, then doesn't it make sense that removing the irritant, us, from the scene is going to cause things to settle down?
No, simply because what's going to happen then is that the civil war will continue. And, I mean, just because a lot of Iraqis don't want us there doesn't preclude us from also concluding that there are plenty of terrorists there.
Then you're arguing in favor of, or you could be, arguing in favor of what Joe Biden proposed 6 months ago, which is let's do what we did with Yugoslavia. Let's balkanize or partition Iraq into a Sunni area, a Shiite area, and a Kurdish area.
Oh, sure.
And
I
take it back to the three states that it was before World War One.
Yeah, no, I proposed something similar to that years ago, before the Iraq War, actually, simply because I don't feel that when you have a tremendous heterogeneous mixture of a bunch of different religious and racial groups, they're going to tend to get along real well in an area that has no history of democracy.
Yeah, so then why not be proposing, you know, proactive things like this rather than using this tragedy that we have in Iraq as basically a tool to trash people who politically you disagree with?
I think that the bottom line here is that the NIA was being used in reverse way. I mean, it was being used to trash President Bush and to trash the administration.
But he deserves trashing. He lied us into a war that's caused 2,700 Americans to die, that's caused the death of somewhere between 100 and 600,000 Iraqis. He deserves to be trashed.
I disagree simply because I feel that the situation in the long run will bear him out as opposed to, you know, the people who said that we should have left Saddam Hussein in power. You know, regardless of how we feel, you know, the war should come out or what the effects of the war should be, I think that it's important to recognize that terrorists are using this as a haven at this point. It is a magnet for terrorists.
Right, we built it for them.
We should be killing them there than that we should be killing them elsewhere.
So you think that the terrorists can't walk and chew gum at the same time? They don't know how to get on an airplane.
No, I think they do know how to get on an airplane, but I also think that whenever you have a war, it's going to draw out.
How can you rationally say that we have to fight them there so we won't fight them here?
It's pretty clear that a lot of al-Qaeda fighters have gone to Iraq as opposed to attempting to infiltrate other places simply because they see an opportunity to fight American troops there.
And yeah, with this NIE,
that is a fact on the ground.
If let's assume for a second that that's true, this NIE is saying that we're creating them, as Rumsfeld said, faster than we can kill them.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Okay. I think we've kind of beat this one into the ground. I appreciate you being with us. FamilySecurityMatters.org, the website. Ben Shapiro, contributing editor. Thanks for the conversation today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the radio support group of by and for we the people of the United States of America. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a heads up, Friday, October 27th from 7 to 9 p.m., the second annual Great Debate at the University of San Francisco War Memorial Gym. Stephanie Miller, me, Rachel Maddow, and local progressive comedian Johnny Steele are going to be taking on Jack Armstrong, Joe Getty, Jerry Doyle, and Rusty Humphreys, right-wing talkers. In a debate at the University of San Francisco, the Honorable former Mayor Willie Brown will moderate the discussion. Tickets are free, and you can get them. You can download them online at quakeradio.com. 960 The Quake in San Francisco, a radio station that carries this program. Check it out. Should be a lot of fun. Should be very interesting. So looking forward to that. It should be I enjoy debating conservatives. What can I say? George W. Bush this morning talking about how at his news conference, Iraqis, this level of violence, no problem. No problem. Yeah. Somehow I think not. Here, this is
George. American and Iraqi health officials today released a report saying that 655,000 Iraqis have died since the Iraq War. That figure is 20 times the figure that you cited in December at 30,000. Mm-hmm. Do you care to amend or update your figure, and do you consider this a credible report?
No, I don't consider it a credible report. Neither does General Casey, and neither do Iraqi officials. I do know that a lot of innocent people have died, and that troubles me and it grieves me. And I applaud the Iraqis for their courage in the face of violence. I am amazed that this is a society which so wants to be free that they're willing to, you know, that there's a level of violence that they tolerate.
Well, in fact, they're not tolerating it. Virtually the entire Iraqi upper middle class and a good chunk of the Iraqi middle class has left Iraq. 71% of Iraqis say they want U.S. forces out quickly. But in the meantime, almost a million have moved to either Jordan, Syria, or Iran since we invaded. And another 300,000 persons are refugees inside their own country, fleeing violence. They're not tolerating violence. I mean, this is incredible that George Bush would say this. This is just absolutely incredible.
You know, that there's a level of violence that they tolerate.
They're not tolerating it. They're fighting back against us, among other things. But there's a larger issue here. Arguably it's not a larger issue. It's part of the whole thing. The Bushies want a provocation. They want the world to be unstable and unsafe in order to scare the American people so that they will vote for Republicans in the election, because they position themselves as, we're the tough guys on the block. We're gonna kick a little Baghdad butt, to quote Bush's daddy. And you know, wherever they can have a fight, it's a fine thing. Because historically, Americans have rallied around presidents during times of fights. Very often it's been Democratic presidents. In fact, most of the 20th century, Republicans referred to those Democrat wars, World War I, World War II, and then Vietnam, LBJ, even though arguably it started under Eisenhower. But nonetheless, here's this from Newsweek. This is the story behind the story. I'm amazed that it's actually even in Newsweek. It's in the first three paragraphs of this article in Newsweek. They're talking about how on September 19th, 2005, just a few weeks ago, North Korea signed a denuclearization agreement with the U.S., with Russia, with China, with Japan, and South Korea, the so-called six-nation talks. They signed it. And they agreed to, quote, abandon all nuclear weapons and existing nuclear programs, end quote. That was their end of the deal. Our end of the deal was that we would, the United States specifically, would, quote, respect each other's sovereignty, that is, with the relation to North Korea, exist peacefully together, and take steps to normalize relations. That's what we said we would do. 4 days later, to quote Selig Harrison in Newsweek International, 4 days later, the U.S. Treasury Department imposed sweeping financial sanctions against North Korea designed to cut off the country's access to the international banking system. 4 days after that, we sign a document saying, you stop building nukes, we'll normalize relations with you. And then 4 days later, we cut off their access to the entire international banking system. And a couple weeks after that, what do? They say, okay, if you're going to do that to us, we're going to, we'll see you're cutting off access and we'll raise you by a nuclear bomb. And now in the Australian, they're reporting that Kim Jong-il, in response to Bush and the other leaders in the area actually saying that this is unacceptable, he said, well, maybe we'll have to respond physically. Maybe we're going to have to bomb somebody. This looks to me like a provocation from the United States. We had a deal with them. And we broke the deal, and now we're blaming them for it. Can you spell Gulf of Tonkin? I thought this was going to happen in the Persian Gulf. It looks like it might be happening in the Korean Peninsula. This might be the October surprise the Republicans had up their sleeve. 27 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Listener-supported radio here, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you by you supporting us, by supporting our sponsors, Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, 1-800-425-2532, sacredgroundscoffee.com. Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, smalldog.com, and, of course, the sponsors on your local station that you hear. Now, Bush's press conference this morning, his photo op, his speech opportunity, his opportunity to bash Democrats, certainly hugely into that. But there was a subtext to this. He is playing this Korean thing like an absolute fiddle. I mean, this is amazing. Here, first of all, on the October 16th issue, of Newsweek International, it talks about how on September 19th, this is about a month ago, North Korea signed this denuclearization agreement with the U.S., China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea. And North Korea said, okay, that's it. No more nuclear weapons. And we said, fine. In exchange for that, we're going to take steps to normalize relations with them. And then 4 days later, the U.S. Treasury Department cuts off North Korea's access to the international banking system, branding it a criminal state. The Bush administration says that this sequence of events was a coincidence. Selig Harrison, writing in Newsweek International, says, whatever the truth, I found on a recent trip to Pyongyang that North Korean leaders view the financial sanctions as the cutting edge of a calculated effort by dominant elements in the administration, the Bush administration, to undercut the September 19th accord, squeeze the Kim Jong-il regime, and eventually force its collapse. In other words, they're viewing this as a provocation. Now, why would Bush want to provoke North Korea into detonating a nuclear bomb just 4 weeks before an election? Well, could it be so that he can go into saber-rattling mode so that we can have a conversation about something other than Mark Foley, so that we can be back to talking about all terrorism all the time, as Karl Rove said this campaign was going to be all about, so we can avoid discussing whether or not the Republicans are going to succeed in privatizing Social Security if they have another 2 years of control over the House and Senate, whether or not the Republicans are going to make the air dirtier, the water dirtier, whether they're going to cut down more forests, whether they're going to roll back more roadless rules, whether they're going to continue their assault on our public school systems, whether they're going to knock another 8 million people out of the unions in the United States. Avoid the discussion of all these things if they're going to keep the minimum wage down as low as they possibly can and not allow people to participate in the American middle class. For heaven's sake. Yeah, well, it's about that. And this is the golden opportunity. I mean, not only is this a political opportunity for political opportunism here, as it were, but it's also an opportunity for Bush to come up with a rationale to hand another $1 trillion to Ronald Reagan's old friends. You'll recall Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz in the Reagan administration were the president and vice president of Bechtel Corporation before they came into the Reagan administration. And the Reagan administration handed about $1 trillion to their good buddies for the Star Wars missile defense system. So far, we've spent about $2 trillion on it. And Bush this morning said, see, this just proves we need more of this Star Wars stuff. Strategic missile defense, they refer to it as.
So in response to North Korea's provocation, we will increase defense cooperation with our allies, including cooperation on ballistic missile defense.
Yeah.
To protect against North Korean aggression and cooperation to prevent North Korea from exporting nuclear and missile technologies.
Mm-hmm. More money for Star Wars, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Amazing. 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. TomHartmann.com if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. You're welcome to drop in and say hi. Mary in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hey, Mary, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, I just want to say, you know, a genuine, true conservative is absolutely disgusted with what's going on. These people that are still supporting this administration are not conservatives. They are neocon lemmings. I mean, the contortions that this administration has had to go through to shift responsibility for all their arrogance and their lies and their incompetence is amazing. And I think really the only way that this country is going to regain its credibility globally is for Americans to face the facts and to call a spade and just say, this administration is crooked, we don't stand for this, and to hold them accountable and move on. Otherwise, we're just digging ourselves deeper.
Yeah. In other words, the Republicans need to take back the Republican Party.
Genuine Republicans.
Yeah. Eisenhower Republicans.
That's right.
Yeah. Real Republicans need to take back the Republican Party. Now, keep in mind, Eisenhower was attacked by many people in his own party for being a liberal. So, I mean, you know, there's always been that debate within the Republican Party. But I agree with you, broadly speaking, that this party does not represent the historic ideals of the Republican. This bunch in control, in power, they don't represent the historic ideals of the Republican Party. But they are the Republican Party right now.
But what American supports lies, chronic lies, incompetence?
Yeah.
And shifting responsibility. I don't think that those are American values, and this
No.
is what this administration is pushing.
I absolutely agree with you, Mary. Thank you very much for the call. Very well said. Eldon in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey, Eldon.
Hey, Tom. First of all, I want to say thank you for being there for us. I appreciate you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
I listened to the press conference this morning, and George Bush has got one thing in mind, and that's fighting. He's like a guy that he's going to go out on the playground and he's going to insult somebody and push him around until they finally get in a fight with him, and then he's going to beat.
And then he's going to bring his daddy in to kick the guy's butt.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
I mean, historically, he has not even fought his own fights.
Well, the terms that he used in talking about North Korea this morning, I could not believe. They were belligerent, bully terms that insulted the dignity of the North Korean administration. And that's the opposite of talk softly and carry a big stick. And he likes to insult people and push people and make people do what he wants, or make other nations do what he wants, because they're afraid of him rather than it's in their own best interest.
Well said, Eldon. Thank you very much. And in fact, this is what he wants right now, is a fight. And he does want to sound like a tough guy because he thinks it's going to get him votes. It's not the best thing for America. It's certainly not the best thing for world peace. But, you know, hey, it's going to get some yahoos out to vote for him, and that's all he wants. John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I love your show. My question for you is why, you know, Bush has done nothing for the middle class people, but the thing that I don't understand is it's always the middle class people that have Bush support bumper stickers on their cars.
Right.
I just was wondering, I just don't understand the theory on that.
Because first of all, you've got a 15-year campaign of disinformation, a serious, significant, major disinformation campaign by right-wing talk radio to redefine what America is all about, what liberals are all about, what democracy is all about, just to turn, you know, up, down, and left, right, and everything else. I mean, just to completely redefine everything. Secondly, because they've been using these wedge issues where they're able to bring people in, whether it's, you know, we're going to take, they're saying, you know, liberals are going to take your Bibles away. I mean, they actually passed out pamphlets that said that. You know, if John Kerry's elected, you won't be able to own a Bible. That we're going to take your guns away. All this kind of nonsense that's coming out. Oh, they're going to have, you know, everybody's going to want to get pregnant so that they can have an abortion because there's so much fun. And not only that, there's going to be gays knocking on your door asking if you have kids. I mean, this kind of insanity is what the Republicans have been pushing. And tragically, there are some Americans who buy this stuff or buy pieces of it. And as long as they have wedge issues that they can keep pushing, you know, that's what they're going to do. And I think, frankly, it's just a terrible tragedy.
Hey,
John,
Tom,
thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And for listening to us there in Phoenix on KPHX. Ken in Sacramento, California. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you're the man.
Thank you.
My question is, and it kind of parallels the last caller, let's say we take back the House and Senate, we really start getting subpoena power, we start really getting some work done. My question to you is, what do you think the attack from the right wing is going to look like? How dirty is it going to get, and what possibility are the Democrats going to have in stopping this drift into fascism? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ken. Thanks for listening on KSAC there in Sacramento. The bottom line is, if the Democrats take the House or Senate, they will have the ability to compel testimony. They'll have the power of the subpoena. Right now, they don't. And there is not a single Democrat in the House or Senate who can call a witness before a committee and say, you, sir, must testify. They can't do it. They do not have that without the permission of a Republican. And so Don Rumsfeld hasn't been held to account. Condi Rice hasn't been held to account. We haven't learned what happened at 9/11. We haven't learned. I mean, there's just a million things that we haven't learned. All of the crimes of the Bush administration, nothing has been investigated. So, frankly, yes, if the Democrats take control, they will start holding these guys accountable. And that's why it's really important that we get out there and work to make sure that the Democrats do take control and do take a majority of the House and the Senate, ideally both. But in the meantime, yeah, the Republicans are going to fight back, but they're going to lose their main tool. 45 minutes past the hour. Back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least fiendishly plot for clean elections. you know, over at velvetrevolution.us, and there's a couple of other sites, too, that are working on this. We'll be having more information as time goes on. Pulling people together to be poll watchers. I mean, you can volunteer to be a poll watcher in your local community. But there's actually folks who are planning on showing up with, like, video cameras and things, taking care of things. George W. Bush, on September 23rd, drops a nuclear bomb on North Korea. The nuclear bomb is an economic nuclear bomb. He cuts them off at the legs by saying North Korea can no longer participate in the international banking system. North Korea responds. Now, this, and Newsweek laying this out, Newsweek International. And this is the amazing thing. I'm not hearing this commentary anywhere in the mainstream media. Nobody is talking about this massive provocation that the Bush administration slapped down North Korea with on the 23rd of September. Nobody is talking about that. I mean, here we are halfway into October. Nobody is talking about that. Except the North Koreans. And nobody's reporting what the North Koreans are saying. This is incredible. Don in Harrington, Delaware. Hey, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Some of the stuff that they talk about, having a war in Korea, nobody mentions what the South Koreans are thinking. Their Seoul is within artillery range. I mean, they have millions of people.
Yeah, the city of Seoul, it's what, 6 million people, 8 million people, something
like
that?
Yeah.
It's just 30 miles away from enough artillery that they could essentially turn the city into, I mean, it would be like Dresden. It would be like Tokyo, the firebombing of Tokyo.
Exactly. They would have a mass refugee problem heading towards Pusan. Their economy's doing great. Why would they want to get into a war? We don't have a stomach for, the Americans do not have a stomach for casualties. We've had 2,700 people lost in Iraq. We would lose that in the first few hours with a war with North Korea.
Yeah. Harry Truman learned that lesson. I mean, you know, it's we fought them back to the 38th parallel?
Yep.
And said, okay, that's it. MacArthur was like, no. Oh, yeah, that's it. Sorry. And thus Eisenhower won the election in 52 on a platform of vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower. That was his campaign slogan.
I was stationed over there when Reagan was president. I was 10 miles from the DMZ. When Reagan came over to visit the DMZ, they told us he was flying from Japan to South Korea. They told us to load up that weekend to go to war because the South Koreans wanted to go north. They issued us out. They were going to issue us out 5 bullets for our 38 and 2 clips for our M16 to go to war.
Well,
and that's, and you know, these Republican conservatives go on about how great Reagan was and how he defended the military. We didn't have enough batteries during the Reagan years. We didn't have enough basic equipment, but we had missiles that didn't work.
Well, and we had tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fine time for millionaires and billionaires. It's absolutely. Don, thank you for the call. You're absolutely right. We can't go to war in North Korea. It would be an absolute disaster. And yet, Bush is getting some wonderful mileage out of all this saber rattling. It allows him to change the subject to what he wants to talk about. Cynthia in Pittsburgh, listening on WPTT. Hey, Cynthia.
Hey, Tom. Your show is brain candy. I tell you.
Well, thank you.
Also have a local host, and a month ago he mentioned this thing about North Korea. His name is Chris Moore. Mm-hmm. And when I heard this the other day, I thought back to that. I don't know where he read it. But you're also saying Newsweek International.
Yeah.
You think this story will make it into our domestic Newsweek?
I'm not sure. I'm looking at the online version, and so it may well be that it is the, you know, that it's in both. But the one that I'm looking at is the online version.
Okay.
And it's over at MSNBC.MSN.com. And then, you know, / there's a bunch of stuff, but I'm sure there's links to it out there.
Okay, but let me be quick and tie this all right to why I originally called. You know, I remember the Taliban was threatened back in late 2000, early 2001. Mm-hmm. So you think about that when we, as far as us provoking North Korea.
Right, we want to build a gas pipeline. You can have a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs.
Right. This is more of the neocon creative destruction, which takes me to Iraq. Why is Joe Biden taking credit for the dividing Iraq up when Leslie Gale proposed this back in 2003?
Oh, I think, you know, dividing Iraq up was proposed back in the mid-50s when we were helping Saddam come to power in 54, as I recall. I mean, that's an idea that's been around for a long time.
And again in the 80s, but then,
I mean, there was a discussion, frankly, about that in right after World War One, when the three former Ottoman Empire states were merged together into Iraq. There was a debate about it. So it's not a new idea, certainly.
So why is Biden trying to take credit for this?
Because he wants to run for president.
But we need to keep our hands off of this disaster.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Well, but at the same time, we have to figure out a way to gracefully exit from it in a way that hopefully not only minimizes risk to our soldiers, but also, that minimizes risk to our soldiers and also minimizes the number of civilian deaths. And that seems like a reasonable step.
Okay, love your show. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Cynthia. Bye. I appreciate it. Biden's the guy who's out in front on this thing. Others are behind it. Yeah, you're right. This is not a unique idea to him. Oh, my. Jeffrey Feldman is going to be with us in the next hour. The editor-in-chief of Frame Shop is open about the new frames of the Bush administration. And we're going to have on the director of the documentary Red State. That should be entertaining. Michael Shea is going to be with us. Alex Stewart in our third hour. And your calls throughout. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the place where we run rings around the right wing. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, the Tom Hartman radio program, 6 minutes past the hour. George W. Bush drops an economic nuclear bomb on North Korea 4 days after he agrees not to. September 19th, he signs an agreement with North Korea. You guys don't build nuclear weapons, we'll normalize relations. Then 4 days later, the orders of the U.S. Treasury Department to cut off North Korea's access to the international banking system. And then 3 weeks later, 3.5 weeks later, North Korea says, oh, yeah, we'll see your bomb and we'll up you one. And now it's turning into a spitting war. Jeffrey Feldman is with us from Frame Shop is Open, the editor of frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Always great to have you with us. Jeffrey, we have a caller who, Dan in Phoenix, indicates he was in North Korea and a military intelligence specialist. I'd like to get him on the line, and then we can both see what... Hey, Dan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was kind of curious because I served in the military under Clinton, and I was in the intelligence business, and I specialized in North Korea. I was working with what they used to call a checkered flag. And that was my area of responsibility. And under the Clinton administration, we had a lot of agreements with North Korea. And to my knowledge, I don't know that they followed through on anything. And I'm not this administration's biggest fan, but everyone seems to be taking them to task for asking North Korea to follow through on anything. And the North Koreans refused to do it.
Well, the fact of the matter is that they did follow through. They did stop their nuclear program. They did put in cameras inside their reactors. They did allow the IAEA in there. That we had continuous monitoring of all of their nuclear activities right up until George W. Bush declared them part of the Axis of Evil. And at that point, they said, okay, if you're going to do this, we're walking away from this thing.
Well, I
mean, the fact of the matter is that North Korea, throughout the Clinton administration and for the first year and a half of the Bush administration, was at least static. And then once Bush became bellicose, they started going nuts. And Bush, for 4.5 years, has done nothing about it.
But I mean, you just don't grow nuclear weapons overnight. And there was, I mean, the entire time I was in the service, it was expected that they were developing nuclear weapons, that there was a time frame in which they were going to be able to deliver them. And that time frame seems to be right in line with everything that I had ever experienced. And so to suggest...
So you're suggesting this is all Clinton's fault?
I'm not suggesting that at all. What I'm saying is that the North Koreans have been incredibly disingenuous in their negotiations from day one, and they've never agreed and followed through on anything. They may suggest it. They may say they are. But the fact that they detonated a weapon and then the very next day suggested that they're going to put it on a missile and fire it at us, and the whole time they've been developing missile technology, this stuff just didn't develop itself over the last...
So, Dan, what are you suggesting we should do?
Well, I'm suggesting that it's disingenuous to sit here for either party, for McCain to sit there and attack Clinton and say that Clinton did nothing, this is all his fault, and it's just as disingenuous for the left to go after Bush and say that he's completely at fault for this thing. It's time to look for a solution in a joint manner, and for both sides to sit there and point their fingers, you're going to get this country nowhere.
Okay. Dan, good point. Jeffrey?
Yes. I think that one of the things that we need to see is that the concern that the American public has is not just that North Korea ran this test in the mountains, but that the Bush administration immediately afterwards came out and basically said, we're not sure exactly what went on. And the big the big red flag that's going up above the Bush administration for a lot of Americans right now, that this is an administration that's really lost, and they're lost in foreign policy because they've taken this really brute force approach to solving every single problem. They confront every potential enemy and basically say, look, if you cross this line in the sand, then we're going to deal with you with brute force. And they abandon all other options. They completely throw to the wind an approach to gathering information, constant engagement, trying to take things one step at a time. And they're just amp things up to this talk of raising the stakes. So it's not just, as the caller suggested, whether or not it was Clinton, the Clinton administration to blame, or whether or not North Korea was not living up to its obligations. But how is it that the Bush administration has acted? What type of foreign policy frame have they imposed on this country? And how has that resulted in the confidence or lack of confidence that the American public has in its government?
Well, the simple fact of the matter is the Clinton administration was engaged in working on the problem with North Korea, and South Korea was actually working on building a relationship with North Korea and trying to bring them into a more rational stance or state. And George W. Bush went to Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia and said, why should I care about these blank holes? And Bandar said, if you get your U.S. troops out of there, you don't have to care about them. And that was like this, according to Bob Woodward's book, The State of Denial. That was George Bush's education about the whole Korean situation. And then Colin Powell walks into the room and says, what are you guys talking about? And Bush says, oh, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly right. We've got a foreign policy which involves walking away from complex issues and then imposing this very simplistic view of how things unfold in the world, including looking for bellicose enemies, people who are standing up and throwing stones at the United States and saying, look, the way we're going to make the world safe is by staring down, invading if necessary, these people who are talking out against us. If you actually listen to what Bush is saying, what he said today in the press conference, he's most concerned about those enemies that stand up and call us names. But he doesn't seem to be able to talk with any intelligence about these ongoing long-term problems. A problem like North Korea is something that is going to involve ongoing negotiations, ongoing issues. I mean, if you listen to what Eisenhower said a long, long time ago, you know, these are, in North Korea, these are problems that are going to be with us for a long, long time. And Bush just backs down from that.
Yeah, and the point that our caller made is one I'm sure Republicans all across the country and callers to Republican talk shows are making, which is, let's kind of overlook the fact that Bush has done nothing for several years, and let's just not blame anybody. Isn't that nice? And in the meantime, over at frameshopisopen.com, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, the editor of frameshopisopen.com, you point out that this frame, a frame that Bush is using, he's repeated the phrase about 100 times in his press conference, quote, the stakes are high. Is it that Bush is raising the stakes by cutting off North Korea's access to the international banking system?
Well, that could be part of it, definitely. I mean, whenever I hear the Bush administration use phrases like the stakes are high, this gambling metaphor that, you know, right now what he's talking about is, look, you either vote Republican in three weeks' time, where everyone's going to die. I mean, that's basically the logic that they're trying to impose on this particular issue. They're trying to say, look, no matter what you think of the decisions we've made, unless you vote Republican, despite what you think of this particular issue, then things are going to be much, much worse. And what he did in the press conference is he tried to steer it once again back to the question of terrorism. But also he tried to defer to the Clinton administration in this really, really cynical way, saying, look, you know, we walked up to the table after this thing was already unfolded. And unless you vote for us again, then, you know, who knows what, nuclear war, terrorist attack. I mean, it's that constant fear drumbeat that he puts out there.
Well, this is what Karl Rove told us the campaign was going to be all about.
Yeah, and it really is insane. And I think, you know, again, if you watched, there was an interview between Wolf Blitzer and Condi Rice that was on yesterday. And what really struck me was not what Condi Rice said, but how she said it. This was a woman who was trapped in panic. It's our Secretary of State who really seemed to be panicked. She was raising her voice. She was using phrases such as, you know, we are speaking very loudly to the North Koreans. Mm-hmm. This was not an image of potentially successful diplomacy. This was a government caught in the oncoming headlights. And you really have to wonder how a North Korean regime, someone like, you know, that is not what I would consider to be the most accomplished and intelligent of dictators in the world, how they can catch our government so completely off guard. It really, you know, shakes public confidence in their ability to solve this problem.
Well, you have to wonder if they caught us off guard. I mean, is this going to be Bush's Gulf of Tonkin?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Well, we had aircraft carriers leave for Iran, from what I've been reading.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're looking east towards the Middle East, or they're looking towards Korea for some type of distraction. But, you know, my sense is that they really are pounding the same issue in the Middle East, and that North Korea is something that they just don't have a plan for.
Yeah. We just have a minute left. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, the editor of FrameShopIsOpen.com. You have over at Frameshop is Open, The Dumb American, a new frame.
Yeah, I think that one way, you know, when we hear all these accusations of Clinton against Clinton and this notion of the stakes are high, we need to really think about the type of frame we want for our foreign policy. And I encourage people to take a look at the Virginia Senate race in particular. We see a good contrast between the Democrat Jim Webb and the Republican incumbent George Allen, between two very different types of frames for foreign policy. George Allen talking about the need for the use of brute strength against any threat. What I call this frame of the dumb American versus Jim Webb talking about the importance of gathering intelligence and basing our decisions on what we know on the ground and in terms of options, this idea that I call the smart American. It's a really stark contrast in the Virginia race.
Well said. Jeffrey Feldman, the editor of FrameShopIsOpen.com. Learn all about it, read all about it over at FrameShopIsOpen.com. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Always great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where being progressive never felt so good.
Rubber stamp.
Have you had enough?
The wire tap.
If you've had enough, then it's time to throw the rascals out.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan. Let's throw the rascals out right now. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. By the way, Link TV is going to broadcast a 4-hour special, Rich and Poor, Inequality in America, tonight and Saturday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a 4-hour special. It includes me and Bill Moyers, Peter Kinoy, Pam Yates' award-winning film Poverty Outlaw, Robert Greenwald's clips from Robert Greenwald's movie Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, and other things like that. So linktv.com, you can check it out. And, of course, if you have Link TV, you know what I'm talking about. So just as a heads up. 22 minutes past the hour. Oh, and one other heads up. This is the last week that Powells.com is offering a 35% discount on my new book, Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. There's a link right to the book at Powells.com on our homepage at TomHartman.com, where you can also drop into our live chat room. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. And Charles in Hillsborough, Ohio. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey, guys. It's good to talk to you. I wanted to speak with you a little bit about how we could maintain the control of our government, how the people should maintain control of our government. I think one of the first things we need to do is hold these politicians accountable for the crimes they've been committing against the United States citizens and citizens of the world.
Yeah, but the simple reality is, Charles, that the only way that we can hold them accountable is if we get Democrats elected into the, as a majority in either the House, the Senate, or both. And the only way that that's going to happen is if we do more than just showing up to vote in 3.5 weeks. We have to as well show up at the county Democratic Party headquarters and say, hey, I'm willing to make phone calls for 2 hours a day or for 15 minutes a day, or I'm willing to walk the neighborhood and pass out literature, or I'm willing to, here's a check for $50. You know, find those candidates who are in tight races around the country and pitch in and help out and do whatever you can to help them be successful. That's what we have to do. It's more than just saying we got to hold them accountable. We've got to actually have people in power who can hold them accountable. And again, it's not to say the Democratic Party is the greatest thing since sliced bread of the salvation of this country, but at least it is the beginning of the process of having checks and balances in the United States. And that's an absolutely essential first step. Ronald in New York City. Hey, Ronald, welcome to the program.
Oh, how you doing? I enjoyed your book, Screwed.
Thank you.
And you know, the American middle class.
Mm-hmm.
But I have one question. If consumer debt is at all-time low, especially among the middle class, wages are stagnant.
Consumer debt's actually at all-time highs, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the government spending's out of control. How's this thing going to resolve itself? Is it going to resolve itself? Is it going to be a depression? What's going to go on in the future? That's my question.
The cracks are showing really, really, really visibly right now, Ronald. Massive consumer debt, massive government debt, a massive balance of trades payments deficit. All of this stuff together is, if any tipping point event happens. And it could be that Bush creating a war could be one of them. But if any tipping of point event happens, then we could either slide into a Great Depression-type scenario, a deflationary scenario, or far more likely into a hyperinflationary scenario, just like Germany did in the 1920s. And one of two things will emerge from that. We are at the end of a historic cycle right now. These 25-year cycles that happen in America of kind of alternating between left and right, as it were. Really what it is alternating between corporations having control over this country for 20, 25 years and then losing control back to the people, and democracy takes over, and then democracy gets subservient to corporations again, and then, you know, and we're at the tail end of a cycle where the corporations have been running the nation. And the question is, when this cycle flips, when this thing resolves itself, when this thing wraps, are we going to flip into a semi-fascistic state, or are we going to flip back into American democracy the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, back into the New Deal? And there are very, very powerful forces on both sides. On the moving back toward the New Deal, you have the vast majority of the American people. On the moving into a fascistic state, you have the Republican Party and their handmaidens. You got the Bush administration. You got a fair number of laws that have recently been passed that would enable that. And you've got some very, very large and powerful multinational corporations that don't give a damn about democracy in America. They're just looking at the bottom line. And the only thing that's going to determine which direction it goes is how energized and how activated the American people get in the political process, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, what scares me, the bill they just passed, you know, where this man can go around and no habeas corpus.
Right.
It's really scary.
Throw your butt in jail and not even tell you why. It's absolutely wrong. You're correct, Ronald. What the Republicans just did is spit in the face of the founders of this country. They just spit in their faces. It's time for our progressive pop quiz. Today's question: on September 24th, George Bush dropped what kind of bomb on North Korea? The sixth caller with the correct answer at 1-866-440-8466 gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. I'm so alive. I'm so enlightened. I can barely survive. A night in my mind. So I've got a plan. And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We have a winner in our progressive pop quiz for the day. Congratulations. Our question: on September 24th, George W. Bush dropped what kind of bomb on North Korea? And congratulations to Dennis Altman's in Seattle. He knew that the correct answer... Yes, there you go. Give Dennis a hand. But he knew that the correct answer is an economic bomb. And interesting, you know, I've gotten a couple of notes here from folks and over in the chat room that Newsweek U.S. is not reporting this. Apparently just Newsweek International. Isn't that fascinating? So, anyway, that's there is that, and congratulations to you, Dennis, and thank you very much for calling in. What is the date here? Friday. Yeah, this Friday, October the Friday the 13th at 6 o'clock, KOPT is presenting a viewing of the movie Red State at the South Eugene High School Auditorium. This is in Eugene, Oregon. Those for our listeners on KOPT in Eugene, Oregon, or many other listeners. We're on three stations in Oregon and a couple in Northern California and one in Washington. Any of which are within driving distance, I guess. It's going to be hosted by Breakfast with Nancy host Nancy Stapp and me, and the Democratic Party Lane County will be there. It should be an interesting gig. And the the director of the documentary Red State, Michael Shea, is on the line with us. RedStateTheMovie.com, the website. Hey, Michael, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Great to have you with us. Tell us about this movie, Red State.
Well, it was inspired by the 2004 presidential election. I was, like I'm sure many of your listeners, quite depressed after the election. And for a while, I was angry at those red state people. But then I started to realize that was arrogant and ignorant of me, and that I should really just go out and meet some and talk to people about why they voted for George Bush. So I grabbed a couple camera crews and left my home in Venice Beach, California, and set out and traveled through 22 red states, traveling 10,000 miles, and did a couple hundred interviews.
And what did you learn?
Well, I had gone with the intention of trying to find some common ground and to try to understand another point of view. And
did you present yourself, Michael Shea, when you encountered people that you were going to video? Did you say, "Hi, I'm a liberal. What do we have in common or not in common?" Or did you did they know what your politics were when you were interviewing them?
Absolutely, I did introduce myself as a liberal. But you know, the tone of the interviews was more conversational. I'm in the film talking with people, so I would sit down with people in their homes or at their place of business or on street corners, and just talk with them. And yes, I was very upfront with my politics. Although I don't do a lot of arguing, I mostly tried to listen and let their point of view get some, exposure.
Sure. So their point of view, by and large, is what?
Well, one of the interesting aspects of the experience was that I wanted to talk a lot about the war, and they didn't want to talk about that. For the most part, these folks wanted to talk about two things: gay marriage and abortion. And their perspectives on those, I guess, would be what you might think. But
that's the sum total in their mind of the serious issues facing America.
Well, yes, you know, morality are definitely the issues. I spoke with one family in Arkansas who, in the first part of the interview, when you see the film, you'd think that they were Democrats. They're ranting about Walmart and corporations and their influence on our lives, and yet then the conversation shifts to abortion and gay marriage, and they are rabid partisan right-wing Republicans.
Did you have an opportunity to ask any of these folks who talk about how, in their mind, abortion is immoral and gay marriage is immoral, what about the morality of the Bible? What about the morality of feeding the hungry, providing homes for the homeless, healing the sick, visiting those in prison? What about the fundamental morality that Jesus lays out in the Sermon on the Mount and in Matthew 25 that the prophets of the Old Testament of Judaism talk about that's found in every major religion, that being the historic moral framework of this country?
I did indeed ask people about that Jesus, you know, that being my conception of Jesus as well as many other people's, and you know, they would go to the Old Testament. I asked a gentleman in North Carolina why you know, we'd see these "What Would Jesus Do" bumper stickers. Well, why, you know, would Jesus have invaded Iraq? And he immediately went to justifying the war, that the Bible does justify war, and, you know, and on and on.
But Jesus never once spoke about abortion and never once spoke about gay marriage or gay anything.
That is certainly true, you know, but as I had said, you know, it wasn't my intention to really confront them on these issues. I'm more interested in showing, people who don't think like them, you know, so let's say maybe moderate Republicans,
right,
the views of the people that they're in bed with.
You know, I had a really bizarre experience. We're talking with Michael Shea. He's the director of a new documentary, Red State, redstatethemovie.com, the website for information about it. It'll be showing this Friday in Eugene the Eugene High School Auditorium. I'll be there, in fact. Are you going to be there as well, Michael?
I'm still trying to make it. I have screenings in Chicago the next day and the prior day, so I'm trying to work out my schedule.
Okay. In any case, I'll be there at 6 o'clock to say hi, and we'll be doing a book signing as well. And the experience that I had was my father died a couple months ago, and we went up to Charlevoix, Michigan, this little town up in northern Michigan. It's on Lake Michigan. It's a fairly wealthy community, actually, for Michigan, and where my mother grew up and where the family, you know, graveyard is for the funeral. And we were staying in you know, a hotel that was, you know, just your kind of generic, in the morning you can go down and get donuts and coffee in the lobby, and there's the TV sitting there kind of thing, you know, hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of these, it was a local version of a Comfort Inn kind of thing, only it was not a chain. A few of those left in the country. And we're sitting there, and the morning TV was on, and it was the local TV affiliate. I mean, they weren't pulling this off cable. This was off the local TV station, and it was one of the big three networks. And it was the morning show, you know, like the Today Show or whatever. And we're sitting there having coffee, and there's a bunch of people sitting around, most of them, you know, local or Michiganders. And the network show ends, and Pat Robertson's 400 Club or 700 Club comes on the local network station.
Right.
And he starts talking about the evil liberals and how the liberals are trying to destroy America. And I'm looking around the room, and there's all these people, these just like average American folks that I grew up with, folks like this in Michigan. I mean, you know farmers and most of them in their 40s, 50s, 60s, nodding their heads and watching it intently. I mean, I'm sitting here horrified by this thing. And is this the source? I mean, not to pin it all on Pat Robertson, although the guy's got $1 billion and a major media empire. But what is the source of the indoctrination that these people have gone through, that they think that these two narrow issues that will probably never impact their lives, abortion and gay marriage, are the crux of morality in America, and foreign wars and homeless people and disease and inability to get health care, which may well impact their lives and, in fact, probably do impact most of their lives, are not moral issues? Or not moral issues worthy of political attention. How did they become so indoctrinated?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I mean, one of the first interviews I did was with a gentleman. And I asked, and he had told me he was a registered Democrat. And I asked him, you know, why he didn't vote Democrat anymore. And he said that they were too liberal for him. And I asked him, you know, why? Can you give me some examples? And he couldn't. And the fact is that he listens to Rush Limbaugh every day. You know, and as you just said, you know, the 700 Club. I mean, The other side has been an orchestrated effort to demonize the term liberal, and they've been great, very successful in it. One of the things I think the movie does very well is show the organization of this. You know, the James Dobson and the Family Research Council, and these folks are very well organized.
James Dobson's on 1,200 radio stations.
Absolutely.
He makes Rush Limbaugh look like a piker.
We attended Justice Sunday, and you know, and it's in the film where all these people are making speeches in the church, telling people to call their senators, and you know, and there were people. It was being beamed around the country.
And yet, there's a church in Pasadena that's being prosecuted by the IRS because its minister preached about peace.
Exactly,
which, as I recall, was Jesus' main message.
But this is, you know, this is an important point, is when I was traveling, I'd meet people who were young, smart, motivated, and, you know, good lawyers who were giving up riches on, you know, on big law firms to work for these organizations. And, you know, these folks are very motivated, very organized, very dedicated, and, you know, the other side, we need to, you know, come up with a response.
Yeah. Sinclair Lewis, in his book, It Can't Happen Here, back in 1930, whatever it was, 32, I think, pointed out that when fascism comes to America, it's going to be wearing a coonskin cap, have an apple pie in one hand and an American flag in the other, and talking about family values. That was the phrase that was used in the book. Michael Shea, the director of the documentary Red State, which will be playing Friday the 13th at the South Eugene High School Auditorium, 6 o'clock. I'll be there. Michael, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
RedStateTheMovie.com. 45 minutes past the hour. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio, the Tom Hartman radio program, right here, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, noon to 3 Eastern time, 9 to noon Pacific time, every day of the week. By the way, on Friday, October 27th, from 7 to 9 p.m., University of San Francisco, I, along with Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, and Johnny Steele on the left, we'll be debating Jack Armstrong, Joe Getty, Jerry Doyle, and Rusty Humphreys
on the Reich,
moderated by the Honorable Willie Brown, and put on by The Quake, the San Francisco Air America affiliate that carries this program. QuakeRadio.com, the website, 960 AM, The Quake. And be there, be square. Tickets are free. Go to QuakeRadio.com, and you can download a ticket that will get you in. But you have to do that. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us, our senior Senator Jack Reed correspondent. Jack Reed?
Yes, well, Senator Jack Reed's having a press conference in about 20 minutes' time. He's probably the only member of Congress who's actually in the Senate or in the House today, which is where I am this afternoon. I was in the White House this morning. So I thought his name was worthy of mention because he's actually showing up.
Oh, my. I didn't realize the Senate was in session.
No, it's not.
So then why show up?
Well, because he's just got back from a trip to Afghanistan and Iraq, and he wants to tell us what he's seen and what he's found.
I see. And, you know, I think it's
not going to be good.
I confess ignorance about who Jack Reed is, where he's from, or what he's about.
Senator Jack Reed, Democrat of Rhode Island.
I see. Okay. So he's Lincoln Chafee's counterpart.
Exactly.
And interesting. Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this thing shakes
out. Yeah, quite an outspoken kind of guy.
By the way, I understand that you don't mind, and Ellen certainly, I know, doesn't mind taking calls from callers, from people who have a question for a White House correspondent or for a real live member of the press, which is what you are. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. So let's just make an announcement here that every day at 10:52 Pacific time, 1:52 Eastern time, 1:52 Eastern time, more or less, 50, you know, 10 minutes before the hour, in the second hour of the program, you're going to be, one of you will be on the program. And if anybody calls in and tells Lauren, who answers the phones at Air America for us, tells Lauren that they have a question for the Talk Radio News correspondent, we'll put you on the air and you can talk with Victoria. You can ask her your question, and we'll just start making that a regular part of the show, if that's all right with you, Victoria.
Okay.
I think that'd be kind of cool.
I think so, too.
Give our listeners an opportunity to interact with you. George W. Bush, the Newsweek International, is apparently the only source of this story, reporting that on the 19th of September, North Korea signed an agreement with the U.S., China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea, pledging to, quote, abandon all nuclear weapons and existing nuclear programs, end quote. And that Washington pledged to, quote, respect each other's sovereignty, exist peacefully together, and take steps to normalize their relationships, end quote. Okay? So in other words, we normalize things for them. They don't make a bomb and blow it up.
Right.
We signed that on the 19th of September. 4 days later, on September 23rd, quoting Newsweek now, The U.S. Treasury Department imposed sweeping financial sanctions against North Korea designed to cut off the country's access to the international banking system, branding it a criminal state guilty of counterfeiting, money laundering, and trafficking in weapons of mass destruction. The Bush administration says the sequence of events was a coincidence.
4 days later?
4 days later, we dropped a nuclear bomb on them by cutting them off from the entire international banking system. And thus they, you know, so Kim Jong-il says, okay, you're going to do that. We'll set off a nuclear bomb. It took him 3-4 weeks to get it together, and he just did it a couple of days ago. And it sure looks to me like Bush is trying to, well, here's the headline, you know, the subhead in this Newsweek story, Newsweek International by Selig Harrison. Is Kim Jong-il ready to provoke a regional crisis, an exclusive account of what Pyongyang really wants? What they really want is not to have the Bush administration doing this to them. I mean, it's looking increasingly like Bush provoked the explosion of this nuclear bomb. Is this the October surprise?
I'd be surprised if it is the October surprise. Because there are too many risk factors. This is the kind of October surprise that Karl Rove can't possibly control. He can't control the reactions of all the other countries in the world.
But it seems like this is actually a lower risk than doing something in the Persian Gulf. And in the Persian Gulf, you've got a bunch of actors who are very unstable. And in North Korea, they're surrounded by countries that are very stable. I mean, China, as much as we may not like their form of government, is very stable. And they're their major ally. You've got Russia involved in this thing. South Korea is stable. Japan is stable. North Korea, you know, yeah, they're gonna blow off a firecracker. They're gonna make some noise. Basically, Kim Jong Il jumping up and down. It gives Bush an opportunity to talk tough. But what's the risk?
Well, I suppose there isn't really one.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if this could be, you know, the fact that on the 23rd of September we cut off North Korea's access to the international banking system. If this provocation was done for purely political purposes. The White House insisting it was just a coincidence. But the Treasury Department doesn't do something like this without at least consultation with Karl Rove or George Bush, you know, a cabinet meeting. And, you know, why was this done, when it was done, and is the press going to cover this story beyond Newsweek International?
I would think if it's in Newsweek International that it will get some coverage because it's such a mainstream magazine.
Yeah, so
is it just international, or did it make it to the national edition?
It, as far as I can tell, it did not make the national edition, just the international.
Then it might not get covered.
So other than probably Keith Olbermann, you know, he'll probably pick it up.
Then it may get covered by others once he starts.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyhow, it's fascinating.
That is fascinating.
I hope you have an opportunity to ask somebody in the White House about this.
Thank you.
We will talk tomorrow.
Okay.
Victoria Jones, thanks so much. TalkRadioNews.com. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program coming up on the top of the hour here. Alex J. Stewart is going to be with us. Retired Army colonel and author of Moral Health. Is Bush thinking of combining Mexico and Canada with the U.S.? And this guy's a conservative. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson in a letter to Archibald Stewart in 1791. I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it. Thomas Jefferson. You know, sometimes you know what you know. Sometimes you don't know what you know. Sometimes you're not sure that you know even what you need to know. Sometimes you don't know what you need to know. Sometimes you don't even know that there are things out there that you need to know that you don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, who knows?
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it possible that George W. Bush is involved in a conspiracy to end the United States of America and merge it with Mexico and Canada? Alex J. Stewart is with us. Alex J. Stewart, Jr. He's the author of Moral Health. He is a retired Army colonel. Alex J. Stewart, welcome to the program, first of all.
Well, sure glad to be here. This is very timely.
Yeah, I agree. And I should preface all this, both, you know, for you and for our listeners, by saying you and I are coming at this from very different perspectives but coming to similar conclusions. For example, in your book Moral Health, you portray Franklin Roosevelt as basically a traitor, and I view him as a hero. I mean, we're politically very, very different, and yet both of us agree that the United States really should maintain some territorial integrity. In March of last year, Stephen Harper and Vicente Fox met with George W. Bush down in Waco, Texas, and out of this came this agreement of some sort. You have the details on this.
Yeah, well, this isn't now well known among some conservative leaders, but the problem is the American public has no idea that their president has been secretly negotiating to end our form of government and to turn us into a socialist government.
Why would George W. Bush want to merge by turn us into a socialist government?
Well,
I assume you mean
you've heard the old expression, power corrupts.
Yeah. And absolute power corrupts, absolutely. I was in George Santamaria.
And this is what's happened. Yeah. George Bush does not have the character to be president. If he had the character to be president, he would never have done anything like this. This idea of trying to secretly convert us into a socialist form of government is politically obscene.
What is the, you know, socialist is a word that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. What specifically are you talking about?
Okay, I'll tell you, bring it very briefly. There is a movement in this country called the Fabian Socialist Conspiracy. Thoroughly researched for 4 years under Archie Roosevelt, and the results published in a great book wisely titled The Great Deceit.
Yeah, this is 1964.
This was published in 1964. Right. But it's the latest.
No, I'm familiar with it. I remember it from back then. What does that have to do with what George Bush is doing?
Well,
right
the point is this: the socialists will do anything to convert us to socialism.
Okay. Again, can we define terms here for just a minute?
Well, let me explain a bit. Under the previous Bush, they sold him on the idea of a one-world government. He made a speech to Congress in which he said, we must have a one-world government, meaning he had bought the Socialist Party line hook completely. Now,
he called it a new world order. Now, but here's, I keep coming back to this, Alex Stewart, and I'm not trying to do this to be confrontational. I'm trying to understand what you're saying, and I want my listeners to as well. By socialist, why do you use the word socialist? Why not use the word fascist, for example? We're talking about control by some of the largest multinational corporations in the world.
Just to go back to the basic research, 354 pages, they call it Fabian socialism. Now, let's not argue about the name. It's the purpose of the outfit. Now, these people gravitate towards academia. And, of course, they meet at the CFR in Washington.
Council on Federal and Foreign Relations.
Now, this plan today, this new plan, SPP, is camouflaged as something that would be very nice and brotherly love and pay off economically. You know, they say it's the security, which is a bunch of baloney, and prosperity partnership is being sold as a prosperity thing. See, where actually what it really is a means of converting us to socialism. Now, we want to impeach the president and the vice president. He's obviously gone along with this. Mm-hmm. Now, the trick is we've got to convince Hastert that he should immediately call a press conference and announce that he's going to impeach the president and the vice president. Now, once that happens, you see the reason for doing that? That is to get the media to tell the public the truth. Now, once the American people know the truth, then our our government is secure.
The truth being that George Bush has sold out to the socialists. And the nature of that sellout is that he wants to merge Canada, Mexico, and the United States into one single nation?
Well, no. This is a very simple thing. The Fabian socialists are again trying to convert us to socialism, this time with these three-country union, see,
right,
but with a socialist government.
So I'm wondering, we're speaking with Alex J. Stewart, Jr., the author of Moral Health, a former retired Army colonel, and you're doing the talk show circuit. I mean, you've contacted us and other groups about being on our program, and we're pleased to have you on. I'm curious how the conservative talk shows are taking your message, or how they're responding to it, and if you're getting any traction with conservatives for the idea of impeaching George Bush.
Yeah, the immediate action you can take is to go through whatever channels you want to get Hastert to make the decision to start the impeachment. That needs to happen. Now, if you're a Republican, I can explain the political side of this, which is this is a political atomic bomb. Now, once it is
you mean the
dropped,
SPP is, the Security and Prosperity Agreement.
Once this is dropped, there's going to be a big explosion. Now, what's the trouble is, right now we got a lot of dirty laundry in the White House, which needs to be cleaned. And the impeachment machine is the cleaning machine. Now, we use that, and it will clean the dirty laundry, and maybe the Republicans would win the next election.
Alex Stewart, do you have any Republican politicians who have signed on with you and the groups that are along with you on this, suggesting that George Bush and Dick Cheney should be impeached?
To be honest with you, I've talked to Tom DeWeese. Tom, you know, he's the head of the American Policy Center in Warrenton, Virginia, and a very prominent chap. Runs a big deal. I'm just a little guy down here in El Paso, Texas. I don't run a big empire at all. But I've talked to him several times in the last month, and he and I do not agree. Mm-hmm. He says it's impossible to get Hastert to start impeachment proceedings.
I would think Republicans would say that. And that's why I said I'm curious what kind of response you're getting from Republicans or from conservatives
to the idea of... He's missing the point. There's an urgency here. In order to get this cleaned up before the election, we've got to move fast.
But now, Hastert, I mean, there's talk about impeaching Hastert right now because he covered up the Foley thing. How can Hastert call for the impeachment of Bush when there's other Republicans who are calling for Hastert to step down?
Well, the public doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, that's why we want the impeachment is a gimmick that we're using in order to make sure that the public discovers the truth. Now, in our country, if you have an informed electorate, our political system works.
Now, you're in El Paso, Texas. I'm curious if Ron Paul, he's probably arguably the most conservative member of the House of Representatives, if he's with you on this. And he's from Texas.
Well, I haven't heard anything from Ron Paul on this, and I'm looking for people that'll go with us. As a matter of fact, I'm sending out 200 newsletters right now, and on the top of each one, I'm saying, "Please help impeach Bush Cheney now."
Yeah. Two Republicans, yeah. You have no website at the moment, however.
Well, the thing's down at the moment.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a little unsolicited advice here, but I'd start there and get the head up. But,
actually, there are a lot of other important things I'd like to talk about because my book is full of good stuff that people don't know anything about.
Okay, well, we have highlighted it here, and we very much appreciate your coming on with us. Alex J. Stewart, Jr., retired U.S. Army colonel. His book, Moral Health, it's available. You can find it, you can Google it on the web, and you can find it in bookstores. Ask for it, request it. Alex J. Stewart, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh. He'll want some.
There's so much to learn. It's all so close and yet so far. I see myself as people see me. Oh, I just know there's something bigger out there. I want to know.
Welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in Little Beirut, as Bush Sr. calls Portland, Oregon, Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live from the studios of our, the mothership here at 620 KPOJ. Welcome back to our program. Yeah, it's the Tom Hartman program. We bring you everything from right-wingers who want to impeach Bush. There's a debate in the chat room. Should we have this guy back on a regular basis, or should we be very careful never to put him on the air again? It's one or the other. From right-wingers who want to impeach Bush to the rational. By the way, just a quick reminder, Friday, October 27th, 7 to 9 p.m., University of San Francisco War Memorial Gymnasium, sponsored by the Quake, KQKE in San Francisco, a station that carries this radio program. Stephanie Miller, me, Rachel Maddow, and local progressive comedian Johnny Steele will be debating Jack Armstrong, Joe Getty, Jerry Doyle, and Rusty Humphreys on the right, moderated by the Honorable Willie Brown. Tickets are free, but you have to get them over at quakeradio.com, so check that out. Larry Scott is with us with VAWatchdog.org, one of the nation's premier veterans watchdog organizations. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you again.
It's great to have you. There's a pile of stuff on your website I'd like to talk about, and we only have about 5 minutes here, so let's pop through this fairly quickly, if that's all right with you.
Fine.
Number one, vast costs loom in veterans' disability claims. You're saying the $500 billion we've spent so far in Iraq is just the beginning.
It is absolutely the beginning, Tom. George Washington University had to get the real facts out of the VA, and under the Freedom of Information Act, they have found that so far more than 100,000 veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan have filed for and received disability compensation. Right now, there are another 200,000 waiting in the pool. This does not include almost 1 million troops who are still active and have not been discharged. What it looks like is out of Iraq and Afghanistan, we could have close to 500,000 troops on some form of disability in the next few years.
Many of them for the rest of their lives.
And many of them for the rest of their lives. The VA is not budgeting for this. The government is not budgeting for this. It's one of the hidden costs of war, and it's something we're going to have to pay very close attention to in the very near future.
And in the meantime, Secretary Nicholson of the VA secretary, cabinet-level buddy of George W. Bush, is moving to actually increase the costs of the Veterans Administration by passing out contracts to for-profit corporations, so the part of that VA budget money gets paid out as dividends to stockholders and in huge obscene salaries to CEOs.
Right. We find, and the latest example of this is the VA outpatient clinic in Columbus, Ohio. Instead of staffing this with VA personnel and using VA services, they've handed out a $21 million contract to Ohio Health, basically, which is an HMO. We know, studies have shown over and over and over again, that outsourced health care costs the VA more than doing it in-house. It is also less efficient. The AFGE, the union, the employees union at the VA, time and time again has shown they are more efficient, not only in the work they do, but they're more cost-efficient. But here they go. The VA is handing out these contracts. This is really a next step in privatizing the VA as they outsource more and more and more health care. We're seeing the VA that eventually, if this trend continues, if the neoconservatives, not only in Congress, but those who run, the political appointees who run the VA, continue this, the VA will be nothing but an HMO in a few years.
Amazing. By the way, something I meant to mention when we came in from the break, and I don't want to forget, the economic bomb that the U.S. dropped on North Korea that I've been raving about most of this morning was 13 months ago, not 3 weeks ago. Just as a heads up, it was 14 months ago we signed the agreement with Korea. It was 13 months ago that we dropped the economic bomb on them. Our listeners know what I'm talking about.
So, right.
Forgive me if I'm off topic.
But no, that's okay. I've been listening.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it was in 2005. And thus Kim Jong-il went nuts, and here we are. How the VA budget cuts – well, actually, before I get to that, we have organizations that are pretending to be veteran service organizations that are not, and they're endorsing political candidates?
Well, yes. There are organizations out there that claim to be veterans coalitions, and one of these one of these organizations. Basically, they claim to be the National Vietnam and Gulf War Veterans Coalition, and you look them up online. They are not congressionally chartered as a veterans organization. There are no mainstream veterans groups that have joined them. If you take a good close look at their membership, it's a veterans motorcycle club in Alabama. It's a veterans mothers club in Oklahoma. And basically, these are nothing but front organizations. What they are is endorsement mills. They will accept money, supposedly, to do veterans work. Then they turn around and funnel that money into endorsements for candidates. And the latest scam is taking place in Pennsylvania, where Rick Santorum is up to his ears. They've endorsed Rick Santorum and given out a press release that makes it sound like veterans have endorsed Rick Santorum. So, veterans, be careful. Don't believe those endorsements.
Amazing. Yep. Amazing. There's nothing that Rick Santorum would stoop to.
It's almost like swift voting, except they reversed it, and it's a phony organization saying good things about candidates.
Incredible. Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org, 27 minutes past the hour. Back to the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour, announcing the October surprise contest on the Tom Hartman program message blogs. The first person to post the correct answer to what's the Bush administration's October surprise gets an autographed copy of my book, Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. The day after the election, we'll be putting up a poll so members can vote on the winner and four runners-up. Each will receive an autographed copy of Screwed. The winner will be announced November 13th, both here and on our message board. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, our message board, of course, and our chat room, live chat room, and everything else over at TomHartman.com. However you spell it should get you there. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, I just want to make this point. I'll try to be as brief as I can. Regarding your last guest, and this constant...
You mean the guest before last?
Yeah, the psycho. Right.
Our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. We always preface these with the Everything You Know Is Wrong music when we bring in people who are kind of on the fringe or a little marginal as a way of just letting our listeners know, hey, you probably ought to know about this because there's people out there in the world, and there's a surprising number of them, actually, who actually believe this is true. But I personally think it's a little...
Right.
Off the scale.
But you got to the crux of it, and you tried to define terms. And I am so tired of this language manipulation, and the Americans too lazy to look up the definition of words, and then it just goes on and on through the...
You mean the fact that I couldn't get him to define socialist?
Yeah, I often bring up the example to conservatives. I say, now, North Korea's official name is called the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea. We do not call them a democracy, even though they like to call themselves that.
Right, and we don't call them a republic either.
Exactly, or the former East Germany was called the Deutsche Demokratische Republik.
Yeah.
It was not, okay?
Yeah.
And last night, Lou Dobbs and Larry King said the term, we have to protect America's democratic free enterprise system. They're not the same thing, and it just bugs me that this keeps going on and on. And the
Tom, this has been going on for, well, at least 100 years. I mean, it really picked up steam when Roosevelt started taking these guys on, Franklin Roosevelt, back in the early 30s. It's not going to go away. I understand your anger. I share your concern.
But Democrats,
and I'm trying to point it out every single day here on this program, as you know.
Yeah, and Democrats, when they argue, they should just stop the agreement, the debate, and right there and say, well, before we even continue, I want to start with definitions of words so we can at least talk the same language here.
Yeah, but what you'll discover is what just happened with my talking with this fellow. I'm forgetting his
name.
Alex Stewart. Thank you,
right.
David. With Alex Stewart, is that when you try to define terms, we're not capable of it. I mean, it's like we're speaking two different languages.
Exactly. And tonight, by the way, Dennis Prager is going to be on Larry King with some other left liberal talk show hosts. I think it's Dennis Prager and Randy Rhodes, I think, is going to be on tonight, and Larry King. And they're going to talk. I called the Dennis Prager show because he was talking about Europe and their Marxist socialist thinking. And I called him up and I said, hey, man, they're democracies with regulated capitalism, and you keep trying to say that they are under tyranny.
He will continue to do that, though. I mean, he's not going to change just because you pointed out reality to him, Tom.
No, I want his listeners to hear that, because Americans are too lazy to look up the definition of words. They think Western Europe is under some tyranny or something.
Well, I don't think most Americans think that, frankly. Although I'll tell you, there are a lot of right-wingers out there who want everybody to believe that. Tom, I got to move along. I got a board full of calls here, but I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
By the way, most Western Europeans I know think that we're under tyranny.
There you go. Well said. Good point.
I called about activism, but I do want to mention one thing about the disability 100,000 people that Larry mentioned. Mm-hmm. If we have, it's being reported that we have 45,000 casualties in Iraq. It's rather interesting then that 100,000 people have been granted disability and 200,000 more are applying.
Yeah, because if you've been granted disability, by definition, you're a casualty, aren't you?
Yes. So something, I mean,
something's amiss.
100,000 is a firm number, so
yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, about activism, most people I know are very much against the Bush regime and so forth. And, you know, we have the biggest movement actually in history. There are more people against Bush on the planet and in this country than there are for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really bizarre. Almost every issue I've been involved with, only about a dozen people in the state of, in Colorado, say, for example, a state with millions of people, show up to anything. Like, you see the same dozen people with each issue over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
We just had, you know, voting. It's one of the prime things we're dealing with right now. We had a very important meeting last night. Four people showed up. And so I hear lots and lots of people complaining. I see very few feet on the ground. You know, some of the campaigns, yes, they're getting some good volunteers, but out of the hundreds of people I know complain, you know, probably less than 1% are actually out there doing things. So,
and
please,
that's really the bottom line, is that we need to be getting out there. We need to be coming to be being active rather than just being passive. Although, you know, for many folks, I mean, a form of being active, and I know a lot of this has been going on over the last 6 years, is sending in $25 a month, you know, or whatever they could afford, $10 a month. That's not an inconsequential thing these days.
But one of the greatest things that people could do is actually everybody needs people to walk their blocks. If you just took the, you know, 30 houses that are right nearby you and volunteered to handle those for some campaign, especially county clerk campaigns, because I stated before, they're actually the most important from my view.
Because they're the ones who are running the elections, basically.
They're the ones who are controlling the voting machines.
Yeah.
And without voting machines, it doesn't matter how many, you know, voting that is accurate, it doesn't matter how many people vote. And so we need to pay attention to that. But if each of us just went out and just did one block, it would take care of, you know, a lot of the needs that the campaigns have.
There you go. Just one block. Well said, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Take care.
1-866-884-8466, our telephone number. And Bob in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hello.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, just some comments that have a lot of insight into the history of the Korean situation.
Mm-hmm.
A book called Full Spectrum Disorder by Stan Goff. He was a specialist. He has tremendous
Stan Goff, the psychologist?
Stan Goff, no. He was in special forces for years and years and years.
Oh, okay.
He's an intellectual now. He's a very interesting person. I would recommend this book to anybody. Full Spectrum Disorder.
Okay.
And he talks about basically the economic problems, the environmental problems, and everything else in North Korea. He's been all over the place.
Yeah.
The other book that goes into some of this is, for everybody's heard of Chalmers Johnson and his book Blowback.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He also goes into a lot of details about what he saw in North Korea. So.
Yeah. The history of the whole Korean thing.
Yeah.
Bob, thank you very much for that.
Okay, sure.
Jim in Pittsburgh. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom. Tom, I was reading my son's Union Journal that he got, and there was an article in there that was put in a copy from New York Magazine, August 14th issue,
mm-hmm.
where it shows that Bush and the Israeli government, along with Condoleezza Rice, conspired to have the Israelis bomb the Hezbollahs long before the two, you know, prisoners were taken.
And what I believe that there's some evidence to that.
And what they wanted to do was but get Iran to attack the United, you know.
Well, maybe. I mean, they viewed Hezbollah as, and perhaps rightly so, as a potentially terroristic or an actual terroristic threat to Israel.
But what they wanted to do is get this before the election of this year.
Yeah.
They wanted to make that a red hot item to get it. And it's really something there that, you know, these.
It didn't quite work out as planned, did it?
Task. Yeah. It's the same man that wrote the article. Uncovered, he's in that investigative report, the Mele massacre and the prison torture.
Yeah, Seymour Hersh you're talking there.
Yeah, Seymour Hersh.
Yeah.
Right. And what I do is my part. I email about Santorum once a week.
Yeah, good.
Oh, yeah.
Good on you, Jim.
Way to go. You get it, tell all your friends to pass it along in the state.
There you
go. And I'll tell you what, he got, you know, campaigns against him right there.
Yeah, he's a very toxic guy. Thanks a lot, Jim, for the call.
Okay,
thanks
you have
for
listening.
You're welcome, and thanks for listening there on WPTT. Also in Pittsburgh, Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hello, Mr. Hartman. Two things, if I may.
Certainly.
The Foley scandal, it's backfired right in front of the Republican eyes. The Limbaugh, you know, and Limbaugh and his wannabes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, if I may say this, it's not Watergate, it's Mastergate.
Oh, man. Okay, at that point, I'm going to have to say thank you very much. Jake in Eureka, California. You've exceeded my pun limit here. Jake in Eureka. Hey, Jake, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Hey, you know, on November 7th, the American people will vote to return the Congress to Democratic control because the Republicans cannot be trusted. Just look at the Mark Foley scandal. Here you have Mr. Fordham, Tom Reynolds, chief of staff, Mark Foley's former chief of staff, saying that Dennis Hastert was told about this years ago. Jim Colby, the congressman from Arizona, saying that the Republican leadership knew about this back in 2000. I mean, the fact is they covered for Mark Foley all of these years just because the Republicans are intent on keeping control of the House of Representatives. And for this alone, Dennis Hastert must resign. He cannot remain Speaker. He has totally failed the people of this country.
Well, not just Hastert. I'd say that John, as to quote Wolf Blitzer yesterday, John Boehner, also needs to resign.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, it's totally unacceptable that they would allow a pedophile to run rampant amongst the pages. These are children that they are in charge of protecting, and they let this man get away with this for years. The Republicans need to be voted out just based on this alone.
Well, I suspect a lot of folks are thinking similar to you, Jake, and it's the October surprise the Republicans were not planning. And we'll see how it shakes out. 3 weeks to go, that's an eternity in politics. I guarantee you they will change the topic, and they will change it hard and loud. And I think that this whole Korea thing is part of it. 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman program. Oh, man, the Republicans even have to pay their hecklers. This is incredible. The same guy who heckled Barbara Streisand night before last had heckled her at several previous places. Turns out the guy is paid by the Republicans for this. Oh, man, a professional heckler. What is this world coming to? A professional Republican heckler. I guess it's predictable. Let's take a look right now at the tragic consequences of the U.S. war and occupation, invasion and now occupation of Iraq.
I want to know the men in the shadows of. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance.
Security and other developments in Iraq reported on Wednesday as of 1,000 hours Greenwich Mean Time from Reuters. In Kut, the body of 5 men bound and blindfolded with multiple gunshot wounds bearing signs of torture were separately found in that town. 3 of the bodies had been retrieved from the Tigris River. In Baghdad, a car bomb exploded near the Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs in northern Baghdad, killing 2 civilians and wounding 7. In Anbar province, 3 U.S. Marines died in action on Monday while operating in western Iraq. In Iskandaria, Brigadier Kais Malmaouri, chief of the Babil police, escaped an assassination attempt when his convoy was struck by a roadside bomb. His driver and two of his bodyguards were wounded in the attack. In Rashid, one insurgent and two policemen were killed and four people were wounded following clashes that erupted after gunmen attacked a police station in that town. In Baghdad, the Iraqi army has arrested 12 insurgents and 34 suspected insurgents in the last 24 hours. In Suwayra, Ra'ad al-Ulfami, a religious cleric of the Mandaean sect, was shot dead by gunmen after they broke into his house in that town. In Baghdad, two roadside bombs targeting a police patrol exploded in quick succession in Ghadir district. Near Kut, a peasant woman died when a bomb exploded when she was inside a farm just outside of Kut. In Baghdad, the U.S. military said a mortar round fired by militiamen caused a fire at an ammunition dump inside a U.S. military base, which caused a series of explosions which racked the capital on Tuesday night. No casualties reported so far. In Fallujah, gunmen killed a policeman in front of his house in the western city of Fallujah. And in other developments, the trial of former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein and six co-accused resumed in Baghdad with all defendants present. Meanwhile, a new study contends nearly 655,000, this is from the Associated Press, 655,000 Iraqis have now died because of the war, suggesting a far higher death toll than other estimates. The new study, researchers calculated how many more Iraqis have died since March 2003 than one would expect without the war. Their conclusion, based on interviews of households and not a body count, is that about 600,000 have died by violence, mostly gunfire. They also found a small increase in deaths from other causes like heart disease and cancer. As Dr. Gilbert Birnbaum, lead author of the study, said in a statement, deaths in Iraq are now occurring at a rate three times that from before the invasion of March 2003. The study by Birnbaum was done by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and others and will be published tomorrow on The Lancet, in The Lancet, the British medical journal. And Olympia Snowe, also Iraq news, Senator Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine. You know, the Republicans, they're starting to figure out that their political survival is at stake here. Olympia Snowe said in a statement that as conditions in Iraq continue to worsen, quote, there must be no question among the Bush administration, the Congress, and the Iraqi unity government that staying the course is neither an option nor a plan. From a Republican. Umberto in Seattle. Hey, Umberto, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing? Hey, I do want to say how much I love your show.
Thank you.
A couple things. Number one is, although we're focusing on getting Bush and the Republicans out, once we have done that, we need to hold the Democrats responsible for how they vote in the Senate and the Congress.
Well, and it even goes a step beyond that, Umberto. We need to become the Democrats. We need to infiltrate that party and take it over. And frankly, I think that that's part of Howard Dean's strategy. That's why he's doing this 50-state strategy and he's doing a grassroots strategy. He's trying to get folks like you and me, the folks of the grassroots, the average person on the street, involved in the party so that it no longer is a party of elites and no longer is a party that part of it, the DLC part of it, is sucking up to corporations. It's a party that's reflecting the people.
I agree, and that brings up my second point. And the second point, I'd love to listen to that gentleman from, I think it was Denver, Colorado.
Jeff.
Sent me saying the same people showing up over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing that I find missing on a lot of political talk shows is people saying, like the suggestion he made. He goes, find a cause and commit to working your block or the two blocks in your neighborhood.
Yep.
And what I find missing a lot of time is what's that one action step that I can do once I step out my front door? So if you can give a web page to go to, once a day, a different cause or a different a topic or a meeting that's taking place or something, so people can see how easy it is to do.
Right, an activism alert for the day sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So but mine is going to be on November 17th at St. Mark's Cathedral, up on Capitol Hill, November 17th at 6 p.m., they're doing the send-off for protesters going to the School of the Americas, in other words, the United States Terrorist Training Ground.
Down in Georgia. So you're going to be there. When and where again is that,
Umberto? That's going to be November 17th, Monday at 6 p.m. at Mark's Cathedral. Everybody show up there to send these guys off.
Great.
Sign a petition and say, hey, let us quit being the terrorists.
There you go, Umberto, and be sure and give us a call on that day, and we'll put you on the air and let you plug it again. Tomorrow I'm going to be challenging conservative Peter Schramm about the war on the middle class. Vicki Karp is going to be here in her new book, Hacked, High-Tech Election Theft in America. That and more in your calls right here on the Tom Hartmann radio program, Truth in Broadcasting. And remember, my friends, activism, as Jeff points out, in Denver, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.